Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved. And the host of the program, the star of the show, the head person, if you will, is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And on today's program, Carol will be speaking with Darian G. She's the author of a brand new book titled The Avalon Ladies Scrapbooking Society, published by Valentine Books. Sounds interesting. That's coming up later in this hour. Right now, though, let's jump into it with Carol Marks in conversation with Raymond Barry. He is a 73-year-old actor who stars in the hit FX series Justified and is probably best known for playing Tom Cruise's father in the movie Born on the 4th of July.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with the show on FX Channel, can you briefly describe it as well as the role you play, that of Arlo Givens?
Well, the series is a modern cowboy, a western type thing, only it takes place in Tennessee. It's very rural, and the economic situation is poor. The result of which is that there's a lot of illicit behavior that goes on, including the selling of drugs, illegal substances like meth and so on. And Arlo is a person who likes to survive in a situation where there's not too much work, and what he does is he sells drugs and breaks the law and does all kinds of bad things. And at the same time, he has a certain degree of charm, and at one time had a wife with whom he argued and raised holy heck, and she was unfortunately killed. And what these people do is survive the best way they can. There's no education in the area, and there's very little opportunity. And what happened was my son became a sheriff, and I became a local drug dealer.
Wow, what a difference.
Yeah, so there's a built-in conflict between the two characters and complicated by a bonding that's based on the primal love that goes on between a father and a son. And naturally, they don't agree on every front. They don't seem to agree on any front, actually.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, and eventually, Arlo ends up in prison for killing a policeman. And while he's in prison, he kills another trustee inmate. And I don't know if I should reveal this. I might as well, because it's water under the bridge. Arlo eventually gets killed. And I guess justifiably so. It's a good fight scene. Like a bunch of old men jumping around punching each other, like a bunch of kids. And ultimately, Arlo is stabbed and dies.
Oh, well.
And that's the end of a four-year run. And I must say, I greatly appreciate having been part of the show. I'm going to go on to a sitcom from here called New Girl, which I've done one episode of already, and I start shooting that on April 1st. So
quite a difference, isn't it, going from a show in which you were very violent to a show that's got comedy in it. But I would imagine, you know, that that's a pleasure to do different things.
It's a pleasure to work, and it's a pleasure to be in a position in my career where I'm not trying to get jobs. I went through that in my 20s and 30s, and I must say the life of an actor is a precarious one. But it's awfully nice if you can make it work for yourself. And I feel that that is the case. I've made the profession work for me, and I feel proud of myself for that, and it's a good time in my life, you know. And in terms of the variation of roles between a sitcom and a heavy drama like Justified, it's a lot of variation. It's like playing two different concerti on the piano.
Well, I think it's
and
great.
And I love that kind of versatility. It kind of validates a certain degree of skill.
Here's what I want to know. What are some of the challenges of being 74, having such an active career, being a father and husband with four children? Where do you get all your energy? I'd like to know, because I would like to have
I'm
some.
Gifted with good genes. I have a healthy body, and I take care of myself. I go to the gym about 5 days a week and work out on a heavy bag and do a rigorous workout. Also, I think there's a mental thing that goes on where I don't even think of myself as old or young. I just go and do my thing. And, you know, if I'm not acting, I'll be writing. I just published a short story, and I have an anthology of plays which I wrote, and I perform them. Or I'll paint or whatever. I don't like wasting my time, you know. And the fact is, this is not a rehearsal. It's my life.
I love that, the way you put it, because that's so true. And we have to, you know, really try new things and do things. And you have a lot of artwork that you do, as you just mentioned, and people can see that on your website.
Yeah, so, RaymondJBarry.org. I've been doing that kind of work since I was 24 years old, 50 years ago. And I love it, you know. My mother was a painter, my grandfather was a painter, my sister, and I paint. It seems to run in the family. I just do it because I like it. I don't sell the stuff. Maybe in my 90s I'll start selling. I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows is right.
Pay tuition for some kid.
You know, I first saw you in a movie, and I've kind of followed your career because you've been in a lot of things. And I just wanted to mention, because it moved me so, and I've never forgotten, that you played Tom Cruise's father in Born on the 4th of July.
Oh,
how
yeah.
How'd you get that role? I mean, it really, really moved me.
Yeah, I loved doing that role. It wasn't the easiest thing in the world, but I love the result of it, and I attribute much of that to Oliver Stone, who directed the film and directed me. But in answer to your question, I received that role from Oliver on the basis of what I had done in a film called Year of the Dragon, which he had written. So he was familiar with my work in Year of the Dragon, since he had a stake in that film. Michael Cimino directed it, but he wrote it. And he became aware of my work through that film and called me in, had me read the role of the father. Later on, after we had made the film, he told me he knew all the time that he wanted me to play the father of Tom Cruise. And we went off to Dallas. You know, he did have me read for it, and I did that, and I think the reading was fine. And then we went off to, we shot that in Dallas, Texas, where the terrain and the architecture is very similar to Long Island.
Hmm.
And it's flat, very similar to Long Island. And the houses are very similar. And, you know, the rest is history.
And it was wonderful.
You know, I was very intimidated. I felt this enormous responsibility to fulfill that role because politically I was against the Vietnam War in my 20s. And also I wanted to fulfill the responsibility that I had taken on to do a good job for Oliver, whom I respected a great deal. So, you know, I had a lot of pressure on myself at that time to come through, and I feel that it all worked out very well. I particularly like the scene in the bedroom after he comes home paralyzed. The father kind of breaks down, And, you know, I felt the work was unique and accurate to what the situation would be, you know.
And it's a situation that a lot of people faced then, and some and families are facing now.
Yes.
With our vets coming home.
Yeah, we're all shell-shocked and post-traumatic stress and missing limbs and the whole thing. I mean, the scenario never ends.
Unfortunately, you are so right. And
yeah.
Finally, because you've been in show business for a long time and show no signs of slowing down or retiring. If you're like me, you're never going to retire because it's a passion to do what you do.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that whole thing. Retire to do what? Lay on a couch and watch myself in old movies? I mean, it's, the whole notion of it is ridiculous.
That 73-year-old actor Raymond Barry from the hit FX series Justified, in conversation with Carol Marx. For more information, visit RaymondBarry.org. Carol Marx returns with more interesting conversation when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat, and here again is the star of the show, Carol Marx. In conversation now with Darian G. Darian G. is the author of a brand new book titled The Avalon Ladies Scrapbooking Society. It's published by Ballantine Books.
Now, I understand, Darian, that you knew you wanted to be a writer in the fourth grade, but what kept you from pursuing your passion until your 30s?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those situations where, you know, you have a dream and you're not really sure if it's a practical thing to do. And as you start to explore it a little bit further, you realize it's probably not a practical thing to do. So I think I was very persuaded mostly by, you know, choices my friends were making and what seemed like the practical, smart choice to make something that seemed more sensible. And I think most writers are very creative people, and so they're looking at how to be in the world and looking at different experiences. And so that's kind of the route that I ended up taking.
Now, let's talk about your latest book, Avalon Ladies Scrapbooking Society, which you succeeded in making something, well, I couldn't put it down. So first, let's talk about the setting of the book. It's a fictional town of Avalon, Illinois. And it seems to be such a caring, small town, really like a modern-day Mayberry. Do you think these types of towns still exist? I hope they do.
Well, I do, too. And I currently live in a small town here. I live in upcountry Hawaii, and our town, when we first moved here, had about 7, and now we're right around 10. And, you know, I really love the charm of a small town. I tend to write about them because I think a lot of what they offer, I hope, like as you mentioned, it's not lost, but there's that real sense of community and that sense of people sometimes being in your business even if you don't want them to be. And yet at the same time, what it shows us is that, you know, we're really not alone, that you've always got people that are in your corner. And so Avalon is that kind of town for me as well.
Now, is it fair to say that your book is all about the importance of keeping memories and in some cases the problems it causes when we try to forget them?
Well, you know, it's really about memories past as well as memories that are waiting to be made. And it also, you know, I really wanted to touch on sort of the scope of what that really means. I mean, we talk about memories as if they're always a good thing. And there are people who have hurtful memories or lost memories or painful memories. And I just kind of wanted to spend some time looking at how that impacts our lives impacts how we move forward or don't move forward or how it encourages us. But also, you know, giving us an opportunity to sort of celebrate the things that have happened that we may or may not recognize, you know, how they've contributed to where we are now in ways, you know, both seen and unseen.
Now, how did you come up with the unique idea of having the women in Avalon preserve their memories through the craft of scrapbooking? And how can scrapbooking be helpful in doing that? And how popular is it?
Well, scrapbooking is really popular. I mean, it's been around. It's kind of taken off in the past couple of decades as a real industry. But even before then, you know, people were always journaling and keeping cards and memorabilia and documentation and so on and finding ways to really sort of cherish them. And so it really goes back generations and centuries. There's just so many different ways to scrapbook. I think when we hear the term now, we assume it means you go to the craft store, you buy the big album, and you buy the stickers and the die cuts, and you do this whole thing, which is definitely one way and a very fun way to scrapbook. But you can do it in very simple ways, too. And I think that's the other thing I wanted to show in the book, is that there are just so many different ways in which you can remember the things that matter most. There's really no right or wrong way to do it. And I felt like the fact that I have these very different women coming together, different ages, different personalities, different backgrounds, and they all have their own way of preserving memories. And that's kind of real, and it's all right, and it all fits together perfectly, and these friendships are able to come about even with all of these differences.
Now, one of the lovely stories in your book is about the importance of scrapbooking and preserving memories. It involves an immigrant and homemaker, Adele Christensen, and
yes,
what her well-meaning children tried to do to make her life easier after her husband died. So what happened, and how was she able to get some of her memories back?
Well, I think she started to realize that, and I think it's you know, coming from a family that does have, you know, my family and my in-laws, you know, came to the United States and made this place their home, there is a tendency to hold on to the physical reminders of things that remind you of where you came from. And in Adele's case, you know, her children were born in the United States, and so it was so easy for them to just kind of think, oh, we'll just help clean up her house. And in doing so, they start removing things that were very precious to her. And what Adele, sort of how Adele evolves, is realizing that, you know, it's not just the things. It's really the memories that she holds in her heart. And there are small things that she can do through photos and small and jotting down memories that can capture that at the same time. The most important thing to her are really her children and the home that she has. And so it was sort of a bit of a redirection of what matters most, but still just recognizing that things that what does matter most is what she's holding close to her inside.
Now, you've heard the saying that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, don't the residents of Avalon all pull together to help the Lady Betty, who is a leader of the Avalon Lady Scrapbooking Society, when they discover she's dealing with a form of dementia? And what form of dementia did she have, and how do they help her? It was a wonderful story.
Yeah, she has a vascular dementia, which, you know, doesn't take necessarily the same progression as, say, Alzheimer's, where you can say, oh, she's at this stage, this is what's happening. It's one of those situations where there are a couple of different reasons that you could have vascular dementia, and it may not be detected right away, which is what happened with Betty. And, you know, Betty Shelton, she's I think everybody has somebody like Betty in their life, you know, sort of that nosy, Parker, pesky, annoying sort of neighbor who's also always there. You know, she's always the first person there sort of with the casserole or to check your mail or to make sure things are okay. But she kind of is a little sticky in that way. And when people realize that she's, you know, having this challenge, you know, they do. They come together and they help her, you know, find ways to remember the things that she's slowly forgetting.
And, you know, it's really touching. You have so many fascinating storylines in your book, Darian. How did you keep track of it all, of all of them, and make your characters so believable? I mean, it had to be tough.
You know, I really, and I know writers say this, and sometimes it sounds so funny, but I really feel like the characters show up. And when they show up, and I start writing it, it kind of becomes clear who wants to be where and who, you know, where it makes sense to keep them in the story and sometimes not. And when I was writing Friendship Red, I realized that I did have sort of this cast of main characters, you know, these women that were forming friendships. But I also saw the rest of the town kind of knocking on the door saying, hey, we have a story, too, that's relevant, and it's shorter, but we want to be a part of this as well. And so when I was writing the Avalon Ladies Scrapbooking Society, I felt like it was, I don't know, I suppose it was suitable, you know, when you think about what scrapbooking really is, which is that you're collecting these bits and pieces from different things that kind of evoke an emotion or an experience. And that was what was happening also with the book as I was writing it. I was having these different characters come forward. I don't plot out my novels in advance, so I actually don't always know where it's going or how it's going to resolve, a situation may resolve. I just basically sit down and start writing, and I kind of go from there. So it was interesting because I got to meet a lot of these characters and work with them and not necessarily, you know in advance what's going to happen with that.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, that must be kind of a lot of fun. Also, now, I hope you're considering writing another novel set in Avalon because I think the town and the people in it are wonderful characters.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's I'm finishing up actually a shorter novella, which is going to be an Avalon Christmas, which will sort of be the novel in between this one and the next Avalon novel as well. So there will be more books coming down the pipeline.
That's Darian G. In conversation with Carol Marks, the book that she wrote is titled The Avalon Ladies Scrapbooking Society. It's published by Ballantine Books. And if you'd like more information, you go to the website, DarianG.com. We spell Darian, DarianGee.com. That's DarianGee.com. Darian G. And that book is titled The Avalon Ladies Scrapbooking Society. I like the name of that book. It's published by Ballantine. And coming up next, we're going to be joined by the executive editor, the vice president and executive editor of the trade publication and the talk radio business Talkers. His name is Kevin Casey. He's also our senior correspondent. We're going to talk a bit about what's going on behind the scenes in the media. And then later in the half hour, we're going to be joined by Steve Wiseman, who'll be talking with a left brain, right brain guy, Andrew Heller, who's not only an outstanding musician, but he's also one of the world's leading computer technologists. Andrew Heller with Steve Wiseman, that and more. Coming your way on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're at the point of the program where we're joined by the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in the talk radio business, Kevin Casey, who's also a senior correspondent here on A Touch of Gray. And for those who listen to this program, we assume you are a talk radio fan, as evidenced by the fact that you're listening to this program, you're listening to this radio station, and talk radio fans are always interested in what's going on behind the scenes in this medium called talk radio. And Kevin, I've often recommended to our listeners that if they want to hear a bunch of programs and audio entertainment, talk media entertainment that you can't hear on the radio, that they can go to one of our sister enterprises known as Pod Jockey. And Pod Jockey, PODJOCKEY.com, is a boutique for outstanding podcasts. Could you give our listeners a bit of an educated overview of what a podcast is?
Absolutely. Simply stated, it's a recorded segment of talk content, and it's digital. And that's why it's Pod, from the Pod names that Apple has used. And that's kind of how it got its name. And it's simply recorded content that you can listen to at your leisure at some point in the future, at any time you want. You can take it with you, listen to it on your computer.
So any radio program other than something that's live and streaming on the air, recorded, put in an on-demand situation, is in fact a podcast.
That's right.
So at PodJockey, we have some pretty good podcasts there, and one in particular, and I know that the people listening to us in New York will recognize this name here on The Answer, and even around the country on some of the great stations that were heard on in L.A. and South Florida, they may remember Lionel. Whatever happened to Lionel, they may say. Well, Lionel is doing quite well on the Internet. In New York City, where we're heard on The Answer, he's also on Channel 11, WPIX-TV. But Lionel has a feature called Lionel Media, and it's just chock full of podcasts, and I think people might enjoy that. We also have on PodJockey a fellow by the name of Brent Seltzer, still at large. And Brent Seltzer is one of the more creative voices that you will hear on the Internet.
Absolutely.
And a gentleman who's heard here in New York on the sports station, WFAN, down the dial. We can mention other call letters. He is Richard Neer. And he is heard on PodJockey with Richard Neer's Novelist Cafe. He has hours and hours of interesting programming at PodJockey.com. What do you think the future is for podcasting?
Podcasting is here to stay. People love on-demand content. It's something that they've grown to enjoy based upon how television is evolving now. People are DVRing their favorite shows more than ever, and podcasting is a simple, it's really a way of doing that with audio content. It's really a great way to define it.
Thank you so much for joining us, Kevin Casey, the Vice President and Executive Editor of Talkers. Talkers.com is the place to go. And pay a visit to PodJockey.com. I'm Michael Harrison. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray, which continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but
Don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. What a great, interesting conversation you're about to hear. Steve is going to be talking with a fellow by the name of Andrew Heller. He's a classically trained pop singer and an engineer. He's a left-brain, right-brain kind of guy, and he's not just an engineer. We're talking about a highly accomplished inventor in the computer sciences and a tremendously highly rated and highly reviewed performer, classically trained. And he has a new CD called I Believe in Angels. He's country and he's gospel and inspirational music, very popular around the country. Here now is Steve Wiseman, in conversation with this interesting individual, Andrew Heller.
Andrew, I have to ask you, which came first in your life, the song or the mega bit? Which did you have the best?
Actually, they coexisted when I was a child. I was singing in summer stock before I was 12, and I was also working down on Canal Street, winding electric motors in the summer and doing design work for a small shop at about the same time. So they've gone hand in hand. I worked my way through college by singing, and I was probably the only graduate student who was well-fed in college. All my friends were waiting tables and starving, and I was doing these 45-minute shows at places like the Penthouse Club that was run at that time by the assistant conductor of the NBC Orchestra, Paul Taubman, and places like 21 Club and Number 1 Fifth Avenue, which is now a dorm, but in those days housed dueling pianos. And my deal was I'd do a set, and I could have anything off the menu I wanted and anything I wanted to drink.
That's so, not a bad deal.
I was sitting eating terrifically and enjoying both sides of my loves, my singing and that. And, of course, I was able to work on weekends singing as well. I was at Marble Collegiate back when Norman Vincent Peale was the pastor there and Cronin was the choral master, and I was his solo tenor, and I used to sing at St. Pat's for Easter and Christmas with Mary Beth Peale on the midnight masses. And so I was able to deal with both up until the time I went to work at IBM and started working 100-hour weeks.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that even before you got there. I'm picturing you living in that world of music and also religious music as well, although you do pop. But how that jarred with the image we have of IBM. You probably didn't find a lot of kindred spirits with your musical side at IBM, did you, or did you not?
First of all, I didn't find a lot of kindred spirits initially because I was kind of an off-the-wall oddity. But I did find a lot of kindred spirits in music. It turns out that the engineers and scientists up at Watson Research, a very large percentage of them, either are patrons of the arts or involved directly in music, play an instrument or have studied music or actively are involved in small bands.
Now,
it's actually a thing that has great historical significance. Plato remarked on music and engineering skills going together hand in hand, and that was thousands of years ago.
You know, certainly when you think of the mathematical qualities to music, and we're going to get into in a couple moments the technology, certainly they do go together. How about the decision, though, to leave technology? You left IBM, then you were doing some great work on your own, but was it a big or a difficult decision to leave that part behind and refocus on music?
The decision wasn't quite as crisp as that. My wife had decided that because of my type A personality, I probably wouldn't survive a long period of time, and therefore she wanted me to sing. I used to sing to her for her birthday, for anniversaries, occasional charities, but she decided she wanted me to record something. so that she would have it after I had, you know, gone the way of all type A personalities. And I started singing again and forgot how much I had enjoyed it. And what I was able to do was slowly back out of my commitments in running high-tech companies and shifted more and more and more to advising startups and continuing roles advising government organizations and companies, and was able to shift more and more into singing. And it, so it was a not an instantaneous flip of a switch, rather it was a process.
Well, you know, there's nothing like timing. And you look at the music industry that had been run in one pattern for so long and has now changed dramatically. And I would assume your extensive knowledge of both music and the digital world made you the perfect person to start a record label. Now, when you started singing again, were you thinking about starting your own record label at first, or did that just, how'd that come about?
It kind of came about by accident. When we had recorded our first album, the one my wife wanted me to do for her, I told her that I would do one more if we could sell a few hundred of these. So we jokingly made a DBA as a record label. And she overachieved. So we went off and decided to do a Christmas album. And while we were doing the Christmas album, I'd been asked by some friends in Hawaii and California to do a few of the old country ballads that I love. Some of the Marty Robbins songs were just so terrific. And I had been singing them with friends over the years. And so I agreed to do that at the same time we were doing the Christmas album. You know the song El Paso?
Oh, sure.
While recording that, we actually took that to number one on the country charts, but while recording that, Lloyd Maines came into the studio, because we were at the studio that his daughter, with the Dixie Chicks was recording at, came in, heard me, came running into the sound booth where I was doing my vocal, and said, "Who are you?" I said, "Well, I know who you are." He says, "I got to play on that." He said, "My brothers and I used to travel with Marty every summer in Europe. You're the only person I've ever heard who sings this song as well as Marty." So Lloyd actually played on that album and has been a friend since. But we started off, as I said, just kind of not intending to do a label, but it happened. And then as we've moved on, all of our albums have had as a band leader since the first two. All of them since then have had Charlie McCoy as our band leader. And as you know, Charlie is in the Musicians Hall of Fame.
Sure.
Was the musical director and conductor for Hee Haw. But with Charlie, we started down a second path where the label actually started to mean something. He wanted to have us produce some albums for him. And we did Over the Rainbow, and then recently a tribute to Hank Williams called Lonesome Whistle, and decided we really had to actually act like a label and be a label. And so we went from our joking Heller Records to a real label, Diamond Disc, and we've brought out some older music with Don Cherry and Willie Nelson that they had sung together back when Don was a young man.
Wow.
Don is now 87, Marianne? 87, 88, and still a delightful character who can still sing, still bring a great tune to you. Remember, Don Cherry was noted for being the only guy to be in the top 10 with music with Band of Gold the same year he was one of the top 10 amateur golfers in the United States.
That's not too shabby either.
And then we've had some other people bring us music. We were working with one of the greatest sax players in the world, Boots Randolph. He and I were going to do some shows together. We saw him. My wife and I visited with he and his wife about 2 weeks after his 80th birthday, and he still was the picture of health. I mean, tall, straight, looking like maybe he was 50.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just come off a tractor when we saw him. He was doing some work out in the fields. Boots, 2 weeks later, before we actually went on the tour, had an aneurysm and was dead within a week.
Mm-hmm.
But we had already agreed to bring some of his albums out. So we have several Boots albums on the label, as well as a number of other things. So we actually got serious about the label kind of by accident.
Interesting. You know, and one last question. Well, first of all, where can people go for more information about you and your music?
Well, the easiest way to find out about me is just to go to Heller.com, and my music is all there. The rest of the music is all available at DiamondDisc.com.
Yeah, that's terrific. You know, we don't have enough time today, but I'd love to talk to you in the future about where you see the music business going in regard to technology, because it's in such a state of flux. And,
oh, yeah,
you know,
the distribution mechanisms are changing so rapidly. And the good news is the labels no longer have total control the way they used to, the big labels.
Andrew Heller in conversation with Steve Wiseman. Go to Heller.com for more information. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. Stephen is a prolific author as well as an expert on so many of the topics we discuss on this program, elder law, elder care, scams. Matter of fact, scams. He's one of the nation's leading authorities on fraud and scams and all those scurrilous people that try to give you viruses in your computer and hack into your information. He's written a book that's considered to be basically the Bible of that topic. It's called The Truth About Avoiding Scams. It's published by Prentice Hall, and I heartily recommend it. I also recommend that you visit Steve's website, which is provocatively appropriately titled, scamicide.com. All right. Steve's here now to talk about something that doesn't quite enter the world of scams, but it's information you can use. He's going to discuss a new survey on long-term care costs. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, just recently, MetLife came out with its Mature Market Institute survey about the costs of long-term care, and they continue to rise in most categories. In the last year, nursing home rates have gone up 3.8%, and this is nationally, to $248 daily for a private room, 3.7% to $222 daily for a semi-private room. Assisted living also has gone up, risen by about 2.1% to $3,550 monthly. And then also rates for adult daycare services. Those remain about unchanged at $70 a day. Nursing homes, just last year, 66% of nursing home residents were women. And the median age, the most common age of residents, was 82 years of age. Actually, 16% of residents were under 65. Assisted living, average age of residents is 86 years old. And assisted living, about half of these assisted living facilities provide both Alzheimer's and dementia care. The big thing that you want to take from this is it is costly for long-term care costs, whether it is in a nursing home, whether you're having an adult foster care or assisted living, which is more and more popular. And you need to plan for this. You need to figure out how you're going to pay for it. And the earlier you start planning, the better. Now, long-term care insurance is something that people should consider. And I say consider, not necessarily purchase, because depending on the amounts of your assets, the premiums may just be too high. And one of the problems with long-term care insurance is that the premiums aren't set. It's the kind of insurance where the premium can go up as the insurance company has found that it needs to raise the rates. And frankly, in recent years, they've raised them quite a bit. One new development, though, that I find is very interesting is life insurance with a long-term care benefit rider. Now, here's how it works. You have a life insurance policy, and it will have cash value. But if you need to go into a nursing home, and in some of these it'll also work for assisted living, you can tap into not the cash value, but the death benefit of that policy. Now, what is so good about this is the cost is not significantly higher than what you would pay for regular life insurance, and yet you've got this coverage. Unlike long-term care insurance, if you don't go into the nursing home, you don't need long-term care, some of them pay for at-home care, the money is gone. Not to say that you didn't have the peace of mind, but the money's gone. With the life insurance, with the long-term care rider, if you don't need it for assisted living, if you don't need it for a nursing home, if you don't need it for care at home, you've got a life insurance policy you can tap into for a loan or pass on to your heirs. The big thing is, think about it. Start planning, and the earlier, the better.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman, a regular on our program, thank you very much. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, on the front line, our producer, putting it all together. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Thank you very much to Kevin Casey, to the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.